All right, Laws of Muktzah. So we're going to start a series on Hilchos Shabbos. Mr. Hashem will go through a bunch of different topics. So we'll start with Muktzah, very practical, every week occurrence, trying to understand what it is that we can touch and cannot touch and can move and cannot move. It's certainly complicated. There are various different categories, each category with its own set of rules and regulations. But Mr. Hashem will go through it and hopefully have some clarity when we are done. The introduction to Muktzah. Muktzah is known as a shvus. A shvus, based on the word of shavos, to rest, is one of several enactments that Chazal established on in the laws of Shabbos. We have, of course, the 39 principal malachas, the 39 principal activities which are prohibited in the Torah. All 39 of those are derived from the activities that were necessary to build the Mishkan. All of the activities which went into building of the Mishkan, the tabernacle in the desert, those were the activities which became prohibited as a av malacha, as one of the principal activities, writing and building, lighting fires, and all of those which we are familiar with are the principal activities. Each one of those activities then has subdivisions of similar types of activities which are prohibited. And then there's a category of rabbinic enactments known as a shvus. And the Rishonim explain that a shvus is not simply a rabbinic enactment like some rabbinic enactments in which it's simply the rabbi saying, we're concerned about this, this, and that, so we'll enact this. And it's purely derived from a rabbinic level of law. It's not based on the Torah. It's the rabbi. It's putting forth certain takanas, gzeiros, enactments, decrees, whatever they are, to either protect us or to move us in a certain direction. The Rishonim explained that this level of shvus, of what muktzah is part of, is derived out of the Torah, that the Torah desired a shabbaton, a type of a rest, a day that has certain elements to it. And Chazal were left with the actual details of what that would look like in terms of putting that into place, so that the concept of the shvus, the concept of creating a day of rest that would look the way that it does today, the way that the rabbis wanted it to look, is rooted in the Torah, in the way that the Torah describes the day of Shabbos, with its details left up to the rabbis to fill in. A couple of examples of this in Halacha, Avelus is one of the classic ones, in which there's a concept of Avelus, there's a concept of mourning in the Torah, at least on the first day, and what that looks like, whether or not you're not wearing shoes, or you're not taking a haircut, or watch, that the rabbis enacted exactly how it would look. The concept is rooted in the Torah with the Rabbanon establishing the details. Chol HaMoed, according to some opinions, is the same way, in which there's a concept of Chol HaMoed and then the rabbis establish exactly what it looked like. So the concept of Muktzah falls into the category in which it's rooted in the Torah and then in which the Rabbanon then gave us the details of exactly how it would look. What's the reason for Muktzah? There are four approaches, four different opinions offered in the Rishonim as to why we have this concept of Muktzah. So we'll just start there as far as understanding what the purpose is of this concept, and then it'll hopefully help us understand some of the laws as they work through. The Rambam, Maimonides, lists three of them himself. He gives three possible understandings of why we have the laws of Muktzah. So the first reason he gives is to achieve a state of Menucha. Concept of Menucha Shabbos, a concept of a rest on Shabbos, state of serenity and rest. The Rambam writes that the sages saw, if we would have left the law as it was, based on the 39 principal malachas, it would be possible for a person to walk to work, to do his business regularly, with his money, with his transactions. He wouldn't be able to write down his transactions, but he could go, he could conduct his business as usual, he can go back home. It would never have created, following the guidelines just put forth by the 39 principal malachas, one can pretty much figure out a way to sort of go through Shabbos as it would be regularly. So says the Rambam, in order to create a forced system that would change the way that we normally do things, so the Rambam suggests that as a possibility for the reason of Muktzah, and that therefore prohibited us, for example, of taking money with us. We can't hold on to money or deal with money, and other various activities which might have otherwise been available to us are all knocked out because of the possibility of Muktzah. That's one reason that he establishes it. So it's worthwhile to know that, as frustrating as it sometimes it is to have the concept of Muktzah, we'll learn certain things which we'd like to be able to do and we can. Rambam understands that to be there to allow for us to create that sense of serenity. The day of Shabbos is the day of Menucha, which it needs to be. Second reason that he posits is that it's a protective fence. You could pick up a pen, you might come to write with a pen. So in order to make sure, this is the most obvious and logical reason for most of the Muktzah, you know, we're going to see, it's not really most of the muktzah that's actually there in the book, but the thing that we're affected by, very often this is the reason, oh, you can't pick up a pen, that's muktzah, because you might come to write with it. Don't pick up that toy, it's muktzah, if you shake it, it's going to make noise, and things like that. That's not, we'll see there are a lot other reasons, but that is one of them, which the Rambam writes, it's simply a very logical protective fence to keep us from doing things which otherwise be prohibited. And the Rambam suggests a very interesting approach. There's an idle class of society, says Rambam, who aren't working. Either they're retired, or they're on vacation, or they're simply unemployed. So for them, says the Rambam, the seventh day, the day of Shabbos, wouldn't look any different than it would for the other days of the week, in a time before radio and television and cars and cell phones. Like, what would Shabbos look different if you're just sitting on a corner schmoozing with your friends, drinking coffee? So you do that on Shabbos, you do that during the week, there'd be no difference. So when you're going on vacation, you're not working anyway. How is Shabbos going to look any different when you're vacationing? So you know you're in a hotel and you walk along the boardwalk like you would have anyway. There'd be no difference. So the Rambam writes, for those types of people, and that includes us during those situations, a lot of the laws of muktzah are what create the distinction between a regular weekday and a day of Shabbos. In any case, those are the three suggestions the Rambam makes. Rambam, of course, is one of the Rishonim, lived in the 1100s. The concept of muktzah predated him by several hundred years. It's written in the Talmud. But for why the sages enacted all of these laws of muktzah, so the Rambam posits these three reasons prohibiting us from moving certain items. Again, either to achieve the state of menucha, protect the fence, or to differentiate Shabbos from the days of the week for those who are not necessarily working, who would have the most obvious distinction otherwise. The Ravid, who is printed alongside the Rambam, who argued on him on many different points in Halacha, suggests a fourth reason, and that is a protection against Hotza'ah. We who have grown up in a city with an Erev have totally taken for granted the fact that we don't pay attention whether or not we have something in our pockets. You know, it doesn't matter to us if we're carrying something, carrying a child. It's just, we have an Erev, so we carry. If you've ever spent Shabbos in a place without an Erev, there's this constant burden every time you step out the door of what's on me. Am I carrying something? Is something in my pocket? Did I take a candy wrapper from my kid and put it there? So muktzah, says the Ravid, took out so many of the items which you otherwise would be carrying. Otherwise, you carry your wallet with you. If it weren't for the concept of muktzah, a person would carry the wallet, and they would have either money or their identification, or there would be no problem with carrying those things. And so you carry it on Shabbos, just like you do during the week. Why? You're identified, you have your things with you. So in order to help prevent hotza'ah, the Ravid suggests that's why the sages enacted muktzah, and that sort of took a lot of these things out from our ability to carry them anyway, and it just sort of made it easier to avoid that particular problem. Those are four reasons suggested. As we'll see, there are going to be at least seven different categories of types of muktzah. You'll see some of these reasons make a lot more sense for some of them, others make more sense for others, some fit for all of them. As we go through, all of these are true to an extent. When the sages enacted muktzah, you know, it's certainly possible that they had all of these reasons in mind, but those are the four that are on the books as far as suggestions as there. Okay, it's all by way of introduction. Okay, let us get started. Definition. What does muktzah mean? When I put this in the Shabbos flyer, and then we're giving a class on the laws of muktzah. So the general policy in the shuls, anytime you write a Hebrew word, you should translate it into English. So I was sort of stuck. How do you translate the laws of muktzah? What does that mean? So I told Gail it's about a paragraph. I can't write a paragraph to describe what exactly this is. But that's what it is. The muktzah literally means set aside. It means put away, refrained, segregated, withheld. All of those words are what the literal word of muktzah, that's what the word means. And in effect, what that means is that a person has said, or has been told by the sages, one or the other which we'll get to, this item is not for use on Shabbos. To say that it's muktzah doesn't mean that it makes noise. To say that it's muktzah doesn't mean that you can't touch it. To say that it's all true, that is muktzah means it's set apart. It's designated for not to be used on Shabbos. And in order, this definition is going to be important as we go through defining each object, as we're going to go through the rules and guidelines to determine is it not muktzah. The main thing to be muktzah means it's set aside, not prepared for use on Shabbos.
Is muktzah a difficult word?
I believe so. Yeah, it's something like, maybe Aramaic, but I believe so. I'm not totally sure about that. Sounds more Hebrew than Aramaic.
Things for Shabbos, the word?
As opposed to
Segregation?
Yeah, it means set aside. No, it means set aside. Yeah, like muktzah min hadas, like set aside in your mind that I'm not planning on using this for Shabbos. So the opposite of muktzah is something which would be mukhan, something which is ready, something which was prepared. So the two things that we are dealing with and trying to determine whether or not something is muktzah or is not muktzah are those two variables. That's the issue at hand. Is this prepared, readied for use on Shabbos? Or is it set aside either by me actively or by the sages telling me or by its natural state? As we'll get to the different things, there are various reasons why it is not fit for use. But that is the basic definition that we are looking for. Is it muksa or is it mukhan? Is it set aside or is it prepared? Now, as we move forward, some general guidelines as to, well, what are the factors that we are going to use to determine whether or not this is prepared or whether or not it's not prepared. So there are two general categories that we use, and that's in the letter C, the general guidelines. Utensils and non-utensils. That which will be classified as a kli, as a utensil. It's going to be a difficult term to define exactly what that is, but some type of usable product designated for a use. Or is it a non-kli? It's a non-utensil. So this will hopefully become clear as we go through. So let's break down those two options. And as every item that we're going to take, we're going to try to determine its status. And then from there, we'll be able to determine its halacha. So when we talk about non-utensils, so the starting point of a non-utensil is that it is muktzah, meaning it is set aside because it has no use. It is inherently considered muktzah. Classic examples of that, if it's a non-utensil, are sticks, rocks, clods of earth, things like that. They don't have any particular use. They're just a natural product found lying around. Doesn't have any particular designated use or purpose. And as such, it's what's known as muksa machmos gufo, the phrase that you have in C-A-I. Muksa machmos gufo, something which is inherently muksa, meaning it doesn't have any inherent purpose or use. If you could determine, that's the first question you would ask. Now, most of the times when we start, not all the time, but most of the time when you're talking about something in your house already, it's not going to be in this category. It's going to be some type of kli, some type of vessel, some type of, have some type of purpose. We're going to go through a bunch of examples tonight. We'll see, not that way, but most of the time we'll have that. But there are circumstances the person is just at the beach playing in the sand. So that sand is inherently muksa. You have a rock, you want to kick a rock on the way to shul. That rock is muksa because it doesn't have any particular purpose. It's not a utensil. It hasn't been shaped or formed or created for any designated purpose. That rock is muksa. You have sticks in your front yard that you want to clear away because the kids want to play or that you want to use as a doorstop. That stick is muksa because it doesn't have any inherent purpose. It's within this first category of a non-kli, a non-utensil, and is therefore considered muksa machmas gufo because of itself. It's inherently unprepared and therefore will be muksa. We're going to talk more about this one tonight. This is going to be the particular example that we'll learn through tonight, so we'll talk a lot more about that. But that's the first in terms of the category of determining if it's a utensil or non-utensil. That's the first level of category, something which is not considered a utensil. Now, items which are not utensils, moving on to, I don't know how you'd say this, items which are not utensils but have been designated for use on Shabbos are not muksa. Meaning, just because something started off inherently as a non-kli, as a non-utensil, doesn't mean it's forever decreed upon it that it's relegated to a muksa item. You can take it and prepare it for use on Shabbos. Because going back again to our main definition, that which determines muksa or non-muksa is simply, is it prepared for use or is it not prepared? Some things are inherently, the status quo is unprepared. A rock on the street is inherently unprepared. Nobody prepared it, and it itself doesn't have any intrinsic value, so it's considered muksa. You can take that rock and designate it to have a purpose. You could designate it to be a doorstop. You could designate it to be a paperweight. And in so doing, can make it into something which is not muksa. So for example, sand, which is bagged, either you did it yourself or you bought it, for the purpose of spreading on an icy walkway, is not muksa. Even though it's just a bag of sand, and sand is inherently has no value, has no purpose, but you've designated it as such. You have either bought it or bagged it for the sake of using it. And if it's icy outside, I'm going to spread this on my walk. So therefore, it's no longer muksa, Correct.
But you have to have that in mind before Shabbos.
Right.
Like the rock for a doorstop.
Correct. Well, we'll talk more about it. Correct. Yeah.
When you talk about finding muktzah, touching it, moving it.
Okay. Thank you. Muktzah is moving it. I apologize. I was supposed to be up here earlier, but yeah. The concept of muktzah, that really should have been the first point, thank you for bringing that up. The concept of muktzah is not about touching it. One is permitted to touch muktzah items. The gezeirah, the decree, was against moving muktzah items. So we'll see, for example, a rock, for example, let's say you did not designate it, you're just out for a walk in a park, you're vacationing somewhere, I don't know if you'd find this kind of rock here in Atlanta, but you find a rock, you're allowed to sit on the rock and hang out. That's totally fine, even though the rock is muktzah. Because it's a nice large rock and you're going to sit on it. It wasn't designated for use before Shabbos, so it has no inherent value. It's not a vessel, it's not a kli, it's not a utensil. It's muktzah, but that doesn't prohibit you from sitting on the rock, just like it wouldn't be prohibited to touch a car. You wouldn't be allowed to move a car and move a rock, but that's usually not going to be the situation in those larger things anyway, so you'd be allowed to sit on it, even though it might move a little as you're sitting on it. That's not considered a problem. That's not the normal way to move either one of those objects, and therefore you would be allowed to sit on it. The concept of muktzah is moving an item which is muktzah.
What if you're looking at the tree on Shabbos, about to have the rain, and a big branch from a tree fell? I mean, you could probably walk on the street, you could walk on the sidewalk. Can you move it so other people not to fall over?
The only question would be if it's an issue of danger. That's where that would change the factors, as we'll see. Whenever there's an issue of danger, then you try to move it, we'll see later, ideally not directly, if it's not a dangerous, it's just an inconvenience, then that would be a classic example where you could not move it, that would be considered muktzah. Okay. So using a rock as a paperweight or a twig as a doorstep, if you had designated it as such before Shabbos started, even though it's within this category of inherently muktzah machmas gufo, that it doesn't have any particular value inherently, but you can create that value, and therefore it will not be considered muktzah on Shabbos. Now, also within this category of non-utensils is food. Food is a non-utensil. It wasn't foreign, it's just a natural product. Food is an exception to this rule of non-utensils in that all food, by definition, is considered mukhan. It's considered prepared. Now, when I use the word automatically, that means that you do not need any active preparation or thought to use it on Shabbos. Now, you all take this for granted because anyone who lives through a Shabbos knows that food is... You don't ever think about food. You don't have to go into your cabinet and decide what it is that you're going to eat. That's an application of this rule that even though it's not a utensil, and therefore, the default position of a non-utensil would be it's not prepared, it doesn't have a use or a purpose. Food is the ultimate exception to that, in that food is always considered prepared. You do not need any active thoughts in order to make it as such. Let me say one more thing. I'm guessing I'm going to answer both of your questions, but maybe not. That, by definition, means that the food is able to be eaten on Shabbos. To say that it's automatically prepared without any of your thought processes says, I can eat this on Shabbos, it's in a state that's edible, and therefore it's considered a prepared. Something which is raw, raw meat, or other foods which are in a state that they are not able to be eaten, and could not be eaten on Shabbos, and would not have that leniency, and would in fact be considered muktzah on Shabbos. We'll talk more about that later. Is that right? Okay, now again, this is all just back, we're going to talk more about this in a few moments. Just as far as breaking down the general guidelines. So again, the first question we look to see is this a utensil, is it not a utensil? If it's not a utensil, doesn't have that shame kli, which we'll talk a little bit more about defining, it's just that rock, it's just a twig, it doesn't have an inherent purpose or value, the default position is that it's going to be muktzah, unless you've either designated it for a purpose, or it's in the category of food. So let's say we have an item in front of us that's considered to be a utensil. So anything which is considered a utensil, its default position is going to be that it's considered prepared because it has some type of designated purpose and therefore is not considered muktzah. So for example, cups, silverware, your pots, all of those things around the kitchen don't need to be prepared actively. They are naturally in a prepared state because you're planning, you are able to use them on Shabbos. Now, the big exception for this, and this is where the entire body of laws of muktzah comes from, is from number one. And that is, unless it's been removed from its ready state. So that a utensil, all toys are considered utensils, and all your games, and almost all the things in your house are considered a utensil. They all are in a default position, not considered muksa, unless they've been removed from that ready state. Now, how do they become removed from the state of being readied and prepared for use on Shabbos? So that happens in one of three primary ways, which will give us several different categories of mitzvah. But the three primary ways are either by Chazal. The sages said you can't use it. For example, a pen, like we discussed earlier. A pen is certainly a kli, and has a clear purpose. It's been formed. It's a kli of sorts. But it's not considered readied for Shabbos because the sages said if you picked up a pen, you might come to write with it. So they took it out of the state of preparedness because of their reasons. One primary reason would be they didn't want you using it unless you come to violate a prohibition of sorts. A sewing needle, a hammer. We're talking about all sorts of things which are inherently valid utensils, except the sages said we don't want you using it because you might come to use it for any various reasons. Primary amongst them, they didn't want you to violate an iser. So they might be one of the reasons why it's taken out of its state of preparedness. Another one is that its owner might have taken it out of its state of preparedness. Classic example here is you have a very expensive camera, or a shochet, a knife, or a knife that a moel would use. You're not going to use that for anything other than its designated purpose. It's too valuable to be used for something which you can use on Shabbos. So you yourself, as Shabbos enters, whether or not you're actively thinking of it or not, by default are saying, I'm not going to use this over Shabbos, because I'm not going to let my kids play with it as a toy. When they want to play with a camera, I buy them a disposable camera for $1.99 at the local store. They don't play with my fancy camera. So anything that you would not allow to be used in any of the other activities from its normal designated use, you are saying, I am setting this aside and not preparing it for use on Shabbos. Sages are okay with it if you wanted to use it, but you yourself as the owner are taking it out of its state of preparedness and saying, for Shabbos, this is not going to be used. And that will create another category of muksa, a more stringent one at that, as we will learn about in Rosh Hashem in the future. Unless you actively said, I'm going to use my fancy camera as a toy over Shabbos for my kids, it would always have that status. So that camera, if it was left out on the cabinet, on the counter, you couldn't move and put away in, if it was left on the counter, you couldn't put it away in a closet somewhere because it's muksa. It has been designated for non-use on Shabbos and therefore is sort of stuck there on the counter because you can't move it because of the fact that you've taken it out of its state of preparedness and therefore falls under the category of things that Chazal said you can't touch muksa. We're not going to allow you to move these things. And it's not that we took it out. The pen that's next, the two things are left on the counter. The pen, you can't move because they took it out of its state of preparedness. And they said, don't touch that pen, don't move it. Because if you move that pen, you're going to come to write with it. The camera, now sometimes categories overlap. The camera is an example of something which would also have been in the category where the sages said, don't move it lest you take a picture. But it's also in the category where you, the owner, said, I'm taking this out of its state of preparedness because I don't want to use it for anything other than its designated thing. And whenever you have that situation, we always go with the more stringent rules of the categories. So it's going to be more stringent that you yourself took the camera out of commission rather than if the sages took it out of commission.
Is it muksa for anybody else who...
Yeah, for everyone.
Who's visiting you and doesn't know?
Yeah. It's going to go based on, I believe it's going to go based on the owner's... You know, I own it. I set the standards for what this is going to be. And almost all products are a general rule. And we go based on most people's use of this kind of product, not on, you know, it's not the camera in your house is not muksa, the camera in my house is muksa, unless I actively changed. Cameras would be the type of thing that are muksa, type of valuable thing.
So you put your camera in a very vulnerable spot that it could be damaged very easily.
Right. Yeah, you're in trouble. You know, the camera example is one of the most stringent types of muksa, where you yourself take it out. It's called muksa machmas chisaron kis, where it's muksa, it's set aside from your mind because of the potential financial loss of using it for the wrong reasons. You don't want it, if it's not being used appropriately, you're not going to use it for anything. So I believe it's one of the most stringent categories, and I'm pretty sure you could not move it. That's the circumstance that the sages said. That's where muksa is. I'm just moving it to protect it. I'm just moving it up right here. That's where you can't move it.
You can touch it,
but you couldn't move it. Not going to. Right. Let's see that. We'll talk more about that when we get there. Yeah.
Well, fortunately, this is sort of new to me that you can designate certain things for use on Shabbos that may not be really useful, like balls or certain. When you said you don't pick her up. Well, maybe
it's just one place. 100%. In other words, muksa is not... Yeah, because this category of the rocks is not a magical category that, like, somehow the sages... It's always, you know, you can't touch it. They said, the only things you can touch are things which you've designated and prepared for use. If you haven't designated or prepared it for use, you can't touch it. Many items are inherently prepared for use. Many items are inherently unprepared. But all you need to do is then prepare it.
Mental gymnastics sometimes and say, well, if there's trees on my yard and I can't make the walkway, I'm going to move those. I mean, is that a correct thought?
That you're going to say you're going to move them?
Like say I have a path to go to shul on my yard. Well, sometimes there's trees on there. I didn't designate it before.
Right, certainly not.
I always feel like it's like a fence around the parapet that somebody behind me might fall.
That situation is entirely dependent on if it's really in a state of danger. Do people normally trip on twigs, or is there a person sometimes most people don't, but there happens to have a person living here who's sometimes a little bit unsafe, she might trip, or he might trip. So, you know, if I had one of my elderly grandparents at my front yard and I had acorns all over the front, like I do at my parents' house, where there are acorns all over the driveway, and it's a sloped driveway, that's dangerous.
Is it in your mind to designate it somewhere in your head that, yes, I'm going to watch out for that?
You're not even designating that for anything. You're not designating it for anything. What are you designating it for? Okay. For what purpose? Just to say I'm going to move it? When you designate it, you have to designate it for permanent use. We'll see in a minute. And you have to, like, this is now a paperweight forever. Yeah, we'll see that in a few minutes. So in that circumstance where you have the twigs on the ground, the first question, is it really in a place of danger? And if it is, you should be stringent on the side of protecting people. I don't know, based on the size of the twigs and the layout of the land, whether or not it really is a problem, so you're careful as you walk. If it's something that you could be careful, then right, you couldn't move it. If it's a place of danger, then you'd have to first move it either with your foot. And if that was impossible, then you could use your hands. But the last resort would be moving it with your hands. But the default position would be that it's muksa.
You can definitely push out if there are acorns. So if there are acorns, I'm going to move it on child.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think so. Okay, continue on in the reasons why it might be removed from a state. We're talking about in the general overview. So we had our non-utensils, now we're in the category of utensils. So the default position of utensil was that it is prepared and you can use it, unless it's been removed. And the way that it might be removed again is either because the sages removed it from your ability to use, because they had their various reasons, or you removed it from your thought process that you don't want to use it for something else. And the last possibility is that the Torah itself removed it. And a couple of classic examples of that would be, say, Chometz on Pesach. So Chometz on Pesach, the Torah says you can't use. It has no purpose for you on Shabbos because it's prohibited from getting any benefit from over Pesach, so therefore it becomes muksa because the Torah says there's nothing you can get from this. Or if you have a garment that's made of shatnez, so you can't wear it, what are you going to do with it? You can't do anything with it. So the Torah takes it out of your ability to use and makes it into a muksa. So we'll get to some, that's another one of the categories where we'll get to, where something is muksa because it in itself is usur to use over Shabbos, and because it's usur to use on Shabbos, therefore it becomes unprepared. So again, I'm hoping without being confusing, that there are various categories. There's the utensil category and the non-utensil category. And each one of those is then your subcategories. In the non-utensil category, the default position is muksa, unless you prepared it. And the exception to that, of course, is food. But other than that, if we can determine that something is a non-utensil, it doesn't have a designated purpose that I could use it for on Shabbos, its default position would be muksa, unless I've already gone ahead and designated it for a purpose. On the utensil side of the thing, of the equation, if I could determine that which in front of me is, in fact, it's a utensil, it's been manufactured, it's a form, it's a kli, a vessel of some sort, so then its default position would be that it's prepared, unless it falls in the category of one of the various reasons which would make it unprepared, either through the sages, through yourself, or through the Torah, through various categories that would make it into something that you will not use.
I'm really concerned about the comments and the follow-up to the comments
is the outside of the Pesach. Right. So this would, yeah, which is Shabbos would be, well, it's only the, in order to the sages on Yom Tov, maybe in Torah, as opposed to Chol HaMoed.
No, because James said that Torah prohibits comments on Pesach, but it's comments on Pesach including Shabbos.
Right. One is this, if on Shabbos it becomes Muksa. No, it's on Tuesday, so take it and go throw it out. On Shabbos you can't even move it from where it is to the garbage because you can't do anything with it. And the Torah takes it out of any form of usefulness, and therefore it falls under a category of Muksa. And therefore you couldn't dispose of it on Shabbos because you're not allowed to move it on Shabbos. Okay, we'll talk, when we get to food, we'll talk about that. Okay, there's some types of muksa that you can move aside to get to what you need, and there's some that you can't. When we get to food, which I do not believe will be tonight, we'll get to that situation. Like if you have like a hammer on your bookshelf and you need the safer, that's behind the hammer. You'll have to move. That's the same kind of shaila, the same kind of question. What happens when a muksa item is in my way? So I don't really care about the muksa item, but I need something behind it. So, you know, a pair of tefillin is sitting on the desk. Situations happen all the time where you leave things on your bed. We'll talk about all that stuff. We'll get there. Okay, so that leaves us basically with three different categories we'll see of utensils, meaning where we're in the utensil side of the equation, and there are three different categories of what the halacha will be. Number one is that which is not muksa at all, meaning it's a utensil, it has a designated purpose, the purpose that it's designated for I'm allowed to use on Shabbos, and there's no reason why I can't. I have a cup. Any cup in my cupboard is by definition a utensil. Sages never said I couldn't use a cup. They're not afraid of my doing anything with this cup. I, in my mind, haven't taken it out of any reason to use it because it's a cup. I plan on using it on Shabbos. Maybe I don't plan on using it, but if somebody wants to use it, they can use it. Torah certainly doesn't prohibit it for any reason. So any utensil, totally fine. You could use it, move it for any reason. As long as there's a reason why you're moving it around, totally fine to move it. You don't have to worry about that. Category number two, we have things which are muksa, but they can be handled and even used in certain instances. So we're going to have certain categories where because it's been taken out of the realm of prepared, it will be muksa, but there will be certain instances in which you can move it. For example, our hammer on the shelf instance. There are going to be instances in which you're allowed to move something that's muksa when you have a need to move it. But there are only going to be certain categories in which we'll learn in which you can actually do that. But there's a lenient category of muksa that generally is muksa, but we'll see there are certain times and places in which you are allowed to move it. And then you have the third, more stringent category, those which are totally muksa and you can never move for any purpose, even if you're afraid that the camera is going to be broken because it's lying on the middle of the floor. There are more stringent categories which doesn't have any leniencies. So in essence, all I do is I want to set up now the principle that even though we're going to be learning mostly about the categories 2 and 3 that are actually muksa and can't be moved, there are going to be exceptions to the rules so that within muksa, we're going to learn that there are certain circumstances where we have to keep this all straight. That which is muksa, and that which isn't muksa. And even within those things that are muksa, which are the categories of things that when they are muksa, but if I have a need to move it, I am allowed to move it. Versus those things which are muksa that even when I have the need to move it, I still can't. So for example, the hammer we'll see, I can move to get to the safer which is behind it, but the fancy camera that's on my bookshelf, I will not be able to move in order to get to the safer which is behind it. So that within muksa we're going to have various those categories, and that's what makes this all so confusing. Have I confused you yet?
Yeah?
No, so far just setting up hopefully the background and the rules is what we're getting at tonight so far. Yeah. You can use a knife to cut a piece of meat. I mean, you have a big shochet knife from a mamoyel. So I can use that knife to cut my steak or my chicken. I will never do that because this is such a valuable knife. I need it for my profession, and this is going to ruin it. So there's nothing about a mo'el's knife which says that it's Muktzeh on Shabbos. It's a knife like any other knife I have in my cupboard. Well, not quite, because this is a very expensive knife, and I need to keep it sharp and in its pristine state. So even though it's a knife like that's a knife, and the knife in my drawers are not Muktzeh, even my really sharp, serrated ones that I cut my turkey and steak with, but my Moel's knife, because it's of value, and I would never use it for anything other than a bris, so if I don't have a bris to use on front Shabbos, it therefore is set aside, and that will have a more stringent status of law. So the camera is like that, the fancy camera. Even though the camera is also prohibited, you know, the Moel's knife is only Muktzeh Machmas Chisar in case it's only Muktzeh because of the value that you attach to it and the fact you don't want to use it. The fancy camera has two reasons why it's Muktzeh. A, because its use is prohibited on Shabbos, and you would never use it for anything other than its designated purpose. But again, as I said, we always go with the more stringent of the categories, and therefore the camera, even though the hammer, for example, will learn, you can move when you need it to get to its place. It's in something that's it's in the way. The camera is going to be more stringent than that. And as I believe we will learn shortly, is going to have a more strict halacha. So those are the three categories of our utensils, some which are totally fine, some which are prohibited unless you need its place or you need it for something. And we'll see, learn all about those exceptions. And then you have those which are just always not permitted to move under any circumstance. And that's just setting up, we'll get to, just hold on one second, we'll get to, again, at least seven different categories of muktzeh, and we'll see the various rules which guide those different categories. Yeah.
Right.
In other words, I'll bring you an example. If you buy a $299 camera because you went away and you didn't have anything and it's sitting around, if my kids want to play with the camera, I'm not going to. If they get their hands on it, I'm not taking it away from them. What's the big deal? So then, the only reason why that camera is muktzeh, and it is muktzeh on Shabbos, but the only reason that it's muktzeh on Shabbos is because it's intended use is prohibited on Shabbos. But it's like a pen. It basically became like a pen. Masha Einkein, as opposed to the fancier camera, my digital camera, if my kids get their hands on them, I'm taking it away from them. So that camera has that additional level. The pen, the hammer, we'll see that whole category is much more lenient, in that the only reason why it's prohibited is the sages were afraid I might do something else with it. It's not inherently set aside from use. The sages said, don't use it so that I don't come to do something else. So that they're lenient on if I need its place. A pen's in the way, you can move it. A hammer's in the way, you can move it, we'll learn. But because that, so the $299 camera, if it's on the shelf, you'd be able to move that. But the fancy camera, that has a different status. That you would take away from your kids. That is going to be on the more stringent category where you yourself took that out of circulation. That will be more stringent.
I thought like a hammer, they want to designate that for just a use.
No, you'll see. We'll see. I hope it's not confusing. I'm bringing it. We're trying to sign it up, but I'm trying to set it up, like pulling it from other places. But we'll get to that. We'll get to that. And the hammer is in the category known as klisha malachto le'isur, a vessel utensil whose primary use is for something which is prohibited on Shabbos. The primary use of the hammer is to build stuff. So that's prohibited. The primary use of a pen is to write. And that, you know, that therefore the pen becomes such a utensil. Primary use of a camera is to take pictures. You're not allowed to do that on Shabbos. So there's a category of muktzeh, which is the reason why the sages forbade you from moving it, is because its primary use is for something which is prohibited, and therefore to protect you from engaging in that, they made that item muktzeh. But that's different than the knife, the Moel's knife, which its primary use is not something which is prohibited. Its primary use is cutting things. You could do that on Shabbos with a knife. But the particular use that you designated it for is something you would never do on Shabbos. Therefore, it has a different category. We'll hopefully get to all these things in greater detail. Yeah?
What about the tefillin on the bed?
So, tefillin on the bed, we'll get to that category. We shall get to that. Yeah, don't worry. Okay, let's just finish up on this on the first page. There's a couple other terms I just wanted to introduce as we go along. Letter D, we have the category of nolad. Nolad means something which first came into existence on Shabbos. This general status of that is going to be considered unprepared, but there are going to be numerous exceptions to that. We'll talk a lot about non-religious ones, at least introduce that concept. There's a difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov as well with this halakha. We'll talk more about that. The other thing is a bosis. I'm not sure which is the best way to spell that in English. A bosis means literally a base. This happens all the time, that the halacha is that a base of something which is muksa becomes muksa also. So like the candy dish, if you put your pen or your money down on the candy dish before Shabbos, so the entire candy dish becomes muksa, even though the candy dish in itself is not muksa. Why is the candy dish not muksa? It's clearly a utensil, and its primary use is for something which is permitted. There's no reason you just put candy in it or whatever else you put in there. There's no reason why that would be fine. But because you put something which is muksa in it, and now the candy dish is holding that, that takes on the status of the muksa, and therefore the whole thing becomes muksa as well. We will have what to talk about as far as that. Also, and the last one, we'll talk about when we get to where it's more relevant. Okay. Let's flip over. So this is the first of our seven categories. Let's start working through the different categories. This one we've already started to talk a lot about tonight already, but we'll go through this. That which is considered muksa machmas gufo. Muksa because of itself, meaning literally in English we would say it's inherently muksa. So this is the general rule which we've discussed. Anything which is not a utensil nor a food. So if it's not a utensil and it's not a food, well then it is muksa machmas gufo. Then it's going to be inherently muksa because it doesn't have... It's inherently unprepared. It's not a utensil of any sort. It's not a food. So what are you going to do with it on Shabbos? It therefore becomes muksa. Which means that we're going to have to define those things which are not considered a utensil. Because it has to be in that category. And also whether or not the food is edible. Now, just a reminder, I put there in parentheses, even if we determine that the item in front of us is a utensil, that doesn't mean that it won't be muksa. Because it still might be hit by the other categories, where either you or the sages or the Torah takes it out of use. But if we can't define it as a utensil, we can't define it as having a designated purpose, then it will be muksa. Alright, so what does that mean? So it's a very difficult term to define, the term kli, the term of a utensil. And different elements of halacha it's defined differently. But the general guideline is something which was not designated before Shabbos for any specific use. Meaning when Shabbos starts, you can't say that there's any particular use that you have for this particular product. So, for example, hopefully again this will become clear as we go through the examples. Sticks and stones, as we've been mentioning, all of those things cannot be moved if you needed to use it as a seat or as a doorstop. You couldn't just go outside over Shabbos and pick up a branch. Sometimes I know I always like to do this during the week. There, behind my house is a path that leads to the Asas and Holly Lane. So there are a lot of spider webs, which if you're the first one to go through there in a while, you have to navigate. So what I often do is I just pick up a stick along the way out of my house, and I just sort of, you know, walk with it in front, and you knock down all the spider webs. So on Shabbos, you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to just pick up a stick off the ground to be able to, you have a purpose why you want to use it, but you wouldn't be allowed to do that on Shabbos. You wouldn't be allowed to move a stone into a certain area. You want to have everybody gather around to tell a story to the kids on Shabbos afternoon. You couldn't go around taking stones for people to sit on. All of those items are considered muksa. I mentioned here, that's what we spoke about earlier, that you're allowed to sit on it without moving it because the concept of muksa is actually moving something, not just touching it. So to sit on a stone where the stone is would be okay. I don't know why that would be a problem, but it might be a problem. But you just couldn't do it with the stick. Unless you designated your stick, we'll learn, unless you designated the stick, this is going to be my Shabbos spider web breaking stick. Breaking the spider web?
Yeah.
I know, it's interesting. Maybe it's a problem. I don't know. Yeah, but you're not using it. The question would be if it's some type of... If it's hard to... What's it going to be? It's going to be... I don't know. Yeah, but the only prohibition about destroying something is something which would be prohibited to build. It's destroy, but you can't. Yeah, but you didn't. It's so flimsy. I don't know, I have to look it up. My gut feeling would be that it's not a problem, but that's a gut feeling, not a learned, educated opinion. It's just, I have to look it up.
Look forward to hearing.
I have to look that up. Someone has to send me an email, otherwise I'm going to forget. But to remind you to look up a spider web. But in any case, if you have, if you had any other purpose, a walking stick, or you want to use it as a walk, you can't use a any of those things because they're considered inherently muksa. They have no purpose. They're not a utensil, and therefore they, by default, fall under the category of something which is muksa. Now, you are allowed to prepare for use on Shabbos. Let us see. There are two ways to prepare something for use on Shabbos. One is either physically altering the object, meaning you take the object and you do something to it. You sand down the rock, you carve something into it, or you do something to it. That, by definition, is showing that I'm now taking this and I'm making it into something of use. It's no longer just a stick or a rock on the street. It's something that I've done something to. That will, by definition, make it into something, a utensil. Any stone that you buy in a store as a paperweight is a utensil. Even though it's a stone, it's been perfect. It's been purchased as such, and it therefore has the status of a utensil. This is what it's used for. Whether or not you're actually using it as a paperweight or not is fine. But if you go to some of those museums and you just buy some stone because it looks nice and it's just sitting on your desk, but it's not a paperweight. You didn't buy it as a paperweight. You just bought it as a little tchotchke to keep on your, that is muksa. Because it has no purpose. It's just a stone. Might look nice, but it's just a stone that's sitting there without any particular purpose and could not then be moved, on Shabbos. The other way to, prepare something for Shabbos is to, by designating it for permanent use. Now when the poskim describe it, they all use the phrase, all the ones that I saw use the phrase, permanent use. La'olam. This is the way that it's going to be used. It's not just, I'm going to use this twig and then after Shabbos I'll do something else with it. This is now going to be its purpose. That does not need to be a verbal declaration. Even just thinking that through will create that status of a designation having it for use, and therefore it becomes prepared. Now, what is an application? Just to get, this is just it's a hard concept to grasp. But you see there'll be some that you were not expecting. So number one, sand at a beach. That sand is muksa. It's like a regular clump of earth. It's not a utensil. It's not a vessel. It hasn't been prepared for any particular use. One is not allowed to play in the sands on Shabbos. Now a sand box is obviously going to be different because by putting the sand in the sand box, you have clearly designated that for that purpose. This is now a toy. And therefore it is okay. Now there are plenty of other problems with playing in the sand. There's a problem of making holes, there's a problem of smoothing out holes. We would not recommend playing in the sand, but even just to be aware of the fact that sand on a beach would be muksa because of the fact that it doesn't have that status and it is not any type of vessel and it's not considered designated for anything. You probably don't have to walk on it. Maybe they're going to be moving it, but yeah, I would think so. But I'm not positive about that. Yeah, it's all sorts of issues. I don't know if that's I don't know. I have to look up exactly how to deal with that. Yes, I understand. Yeah. Dead rodents or insects. So this is always a problem. They are muksa machlas gufo. You walk into whatever room and you find there's a dead cockroach or whatever it is, so it's muksa. Now, there's a category which is called graf shel ri'i, which is something which is disgusting, which you're allowed to move because of the fact that it's disgusting. So Chazal said they didn't include that within the category of muksa. So I remember we had this, we had the shayla where there was a rat trap sound. So if you caught a rat over Shabbos, so it is where the trap was set before Shabbos. So the rat's muksa, but a dead rat is going to very quickly become in that category of graf shel ri'i. A dead cockroach or a dead fly on the windowsill is a lot harder argument. If it's sitting on your dining room table, it's one thing. But where it's not really there, so that's something which is muksa on Shabbos because it is in this category something which is inherently muksa. It's not prepared until it gets to the point in which it'd be considered disgusting. It would have to be left there. Right, so then that's muksa in a tuklam in atzai, where you're not touching it directly with your hand. That would be a better option.
I have taken live ones out of shul. I seem to be the only one in my section that can take a live one. With everyone saying, don't tell it. And I do drop it live in the trash can or outside. Is that wrong?
The issues there are, A, make sure you don't kill it, as everyone is clearly telling you. Trapping is an issue. So I don't know, depending on where you're putting it, whether or not that would be considered trapping it. I only saw that the dead rodents are considered muksa. I don't know that live ones are also considered muksa. Either way, either in your hand or in the place where you're putting it would be a problem. That's also. And you're not allowed to like cover it in a cup, even just take it outside. Yeah, well, in my house, I have a broom that I play hockey with it until I get it out the door. And it just keeps getting things swatted outside. Yeah. Whatever. Okay, blank sheets of paper, notebooks, blank sheets of paper. That is muksa, because it has no purpose that you could possibly do anything with on Shabbos. So those blank pieces of paper lying around, the blank notebooks, those are something which would fall into the category of muksa. And when you have these home fixtures that are not yet installed, you know, tiles, doorknobs, lighting, those things that are just lying around, are also considered muksa machmos, but they have no purpose that you could possibly use them for over Shabbos, and therefore they're just into this category of something which is inherently considered muksa. Laundry detergents are included in the list. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes that a bar of soap is considered muksa machmos gufo, because since you can't use it on Shabbos, so it has no other purpose. It's just it is within that category of something which would be considered muksa machmos gufo. Household plants are within that category, and candles is a big machlokas in the post, a big dispute. What the status of candles are? Is a candle, a non-lit candle, considered a utensil of sorts? Now the difference is going to be what we'll learn next week. As I mentioned, a hammer, anything which, if it's only in the category of a utensil which was prohibited because its use is normally something which is done which is prohibited, which is your hammer, which is your pen, so that has leniencies. When you need its place, so then you're allowed to move it. But if a candle is not in that, a candle is for sure in that category. It's definitely going to be at least muksa because the general purpose of the candle is to light. So it's going to be like a pen. But some posts can hold that a candle doesn't have the status of a utensil. It's just a ball of wax put together. And therefore, if you're under this category of muksa machmas gufo, something which is inherently muksa, and if it's in that category, so then it's not going to have the leniency and you couldn't move it at all. Even if you needed this place.
The soap? I mean, you don't use
the bar of soap? The bar of soap you can't use on Shabbos because of the smearing that you do when you rub it on your hands. Yeah, the only type of soap you're allowed to use on Shabbos is a liquid soap, which is liquidy enough that it would run. And if you tilt it over, it would pour out. That's the kind of stuff that you could use on Shabbos. you needed to hear that. I disagree with you. More than you wanted, maybe, but not more than you needed, yeah. Correct. We haven't addressed the category of hammer yet. I've referenced it a bunch of times, but we haven't yet addressed. That's the category called muksa klisha malachta l'isser, a utensil whose primary usage is for something other. And I use the word primary because that means it has other types of usages. You could use a hammer to crack a nut open, and that's where the leniency will come in. That if, let's say, you want to use a hammer to crack a nut, then you'd be allowed to because I now need this hammer for another purpose. And it has some leniency, which that would not apply to other things. But we'll get to that, yeah.
Well, the blank sheets of paper, you might use it as a fan.
Right. Right here, folks can bring it down as something which is which has no purpose. Now, a lot of these things are hard. I was speaking to Prinsky about this before. Almost anything you can come up with something that you would use it for. And you take even the classic example of a stone. You could use a stone for a paperweight. Why do you have to designate it? But it's still considered inherently muksa because that's not what it's there for. So, right. That you could do, 100%. In other words, a blank piece of paper has no use because you can't write on it, and what are you going to do with it? There's no meaning. It doesn't have something, you're not going to read it. There's nothing there. So just like a stone that you can designate for use, so you could designate this piece of paper as a fan, 100%. You could do that. That would have to be done before Shabbos. Because it does.
All right, but what about insects that can pollinate?
Right. That is a separate category in terms of where there's a danger involved. In terms of killing it, in terms of sport.
Getting rid of it, but my husband goes to the beach. If there would be in the house.
Okay, you're talking about trapping it. That's not a muksa issue. That's an issue of, in terms of how do you stop it and how do you get rid of it. It's a big discussion in terms of whether or not the discussion by bees and by them. It's a sukkah discussion in terms of how do you get them out of the sukkah. I'm not answering the question because it's a larger discussion, but it is a valid question which deserves an answer. I just don't have one for you now. The last thing we'll do tonight is the last thing on the list is coins or money. Is also considered in this more stringent category of muktzah because it inherently doesn't have any purpose. We attribute a value to it, certainly during the week, but because it of itself does not have any intrinsic function or use, is also in this more stringent category of what would be considered muktzah, machmas gufo, that which is inherently considered muktzah, and will therefore have to deal with that when you have money lying around the house, what ways around that we have. We'll get to that. All in Eretz Hashem. Next week we'll continue with our broken utensils and things like that, and continue with this category, and then move on to some of the other categories of muktzah.